I love to learn a lot, but I think the best way to learn is to do, and to do with a lot of good people as well. So every artist that I know that's at a top A class level or a better level or higher experience level than I am, I love to work with you. Like, let me work with you, because that's how I learn. You are my guru at that time. Shailesh, for example, the dancer we've been talking about, at that time, those moments that we interacted, we had our jam sessions, at that time he was my guru. Like, I might have been the same to him, I will never see myself like that, but like, because that's where you learn, that's where you feel, that's where you explore, that's where you feel, that's where you enjoy, that's where you feel the pain of not doing it right, or not coming to that emotion, or not that, like, yeah, so.
Hi, you're listening to Conversations with Musicians with Leah Roseman. This podcast strives to inspire you through the personal stories of a diversity of musicians worldwide, with in-depth conversations and great music that reveal the depth and breadth to a life in music. Avi Krishna is a Dutch sarod player based in Amsterdam of Indo-Surinamese heritage. You get to know the sarod as an instrument and hear Avi's perspectives on Dutch society and his interesting collaborations. Among his mentors is his inspiring father, Ramdu Krishna, a multi-talented musician, director, and painter who played a pivotal role in shaping Avi's musical journey, along with his guru, Gustav Rey. As a young man, Avi embarked on a successful career in sales and marketing, but during this time, he pushed music aside, and I found it deeply touching to hear how he was able to come back to music with the wisdom of having left such an important part of himself behind. You'll hear about Avi's project working with schools in Amsterdam to help provide music programs in underserved communities, and this episode features some of his sarod music. Like all my episodes, you can watch this on my YouTube channel or listen to the podcast on all the podcast platforms, and I've also linked the transcript to my website, leahroseman.com. Finally, before we jump into the episode, did you know that this podcast is in season 4? And that I send out a weekly email newsletter where you can get access to sneak peeks of upcoming guests and be inspired by highlights from the archive? Have a look at the description of this episode, where you'll find all the links, including the support link to buy this independent podcaster a coffee. Now to Avi Krishna and his sarod.
Thanks so much for joining me here today, Avi.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Just before we...
All the way from Amsterdam.
Yeah. Actually, I interviewed someone in Utrecht yesterday for the second time. Okay. Yeah, and he was interested to hear about you, Mark van Vught.
Okay. Well, the interest goes both ways. Like, now I'm curious who it is.
He's a jazz guitarist and composer, Mark van Vught. And I interviewed him actually 2 years ago, and his wife, Ineke van Doorn, and they do lots of cool projects. So he just has a new album coming out. So he's that episode will be going out before yours.
Nice. Yeah. Nice.
So you have your sarod there. So I was hoping we could start with the instrument before we get into some other stuff.
Sure. Shall I pick it up?
Thank you.
Yeah. So would you like me to just play a little bit or explain about the instrument? Because I don't think it's such a common instrument for a lot of people. So
it's up to you if you want to play first or explain.
Yeah, well, my guru always used to say, like, if you want to let people know about your music, just play instead of talk a lot. Okay, let me see. It's nothing really I prepared. As you know, Indian classical music is mostly in the moment and, you know, like... Thank you. just an introduction to the sound.
Beautiful.
I could play some more in a bit if you want. That's one of my cats. Yeah, so about the Sarod, maybe I can tell a little bit about the Sarod. For those who don't know, it's an Indian classical instrument, but it comes from the, it has its origins in the Persian Rabab. Like one of the stories is like tradesmen or soldiers, their routes came from Persia, like current Iran or Afghanistan, and moved through India, and like the Indian artists showed interest in the music because it's quite similar, and it adapted from the rabab to the sarod in a way that they changed the strings from catguards to steel strings. They removed the frets, or I don't know how you call it, frets, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and put a steel plate on it to make it possible to emulate the voice or the typical movements in Indian classical music a little bit more. And it became a little bit longer, stretched. It's covered with a goatskin, and it's not really environmental friendly, but hey, teak wood, one of the strongest wood types, artun, has 23 strings, this variation, because you got like two main styles of sarods. This style has 23 strings, of which like 15 taraf, resonating strings, like, and three, as I call it, chikari, or as I call it, like rhythmical strings. And then five melodic strings where you move within. So that's pretty much the whole thing about the sarod. As I said, we have more line, two main types of sarods. Like you have another version that, which has 24, or 5, or 7 strings. So has more to do with the scaling and the tuning. So we get more bass or different. But pretty much we play in the same way.
Mm. Yeah. For those people interested, one of my previous guests played the rabab, Philip Griffin, in Australia. And I find it interesting also in terms of the sitar, because the sitar, most of the bending of the notes are done vertically. But with the sarod, it's more like a violin. It's just back and forth.
Yeah, that's the thing which attracted me when I got introduced to the sarod at first, because I used to play cello, mm-hmm. or I used to study cello for a couple of years, where you use the glidings and the glissandos in that same way too. So that attracted me, and I tried to practice a little bit of sitar. And it's quite a heavy instrument. There's a lot of impact on the pulling and the thing, and the sound as well. This is a little bit more round, deeper sound, maybe more closer to the vina, if you may know, which has a more bass, more rounder, more lower. It's more in the lower region. So that's one of the things that affected me. But unfortunately, I couldn't continue to play cello because you have to play on your nails.
I was going to ask about that. It's very unusual.
Yeah. That's well, our ancestors, they chose for a lot of unusual ways of playing. Like this is on the nails, so I got a lot of grooves on my nails all the time, and I've been playing this from childhood, so going through elementary school, high school, you have to explain all the guys and girls like why you have long nails. So, well, there was a thing, but then again, in sarangi, another instrument bow instrument, they play on the top of their nails. So it's like the, I don't know how you call it in English, how to translate into English, but where your nails end and your skin starts, that's the place. So that's quite painful. So that's the whole torture itself before you even can start playing in a normal way. So, and sitar, as you know, it's on the top of your tip of your fingers.
Yeah, I was just thinking, I interviewed a gadulka player, Kristina Beleva, and I think they kind of play on the top, as I remember, as well. And as a violinist, I find that so weird. Yeah, if you could just show us the difference, because I know if you play with your finger, it's going to sound very different than with your nail.
Yeah. So what do you, you play on your nails and it sounds pretty much like this. And if I do the same, on the tip of my fingers, it's like I cannot even glide.
Yeah.
Like I would have to use a lot of oil to, but that's like it dampens the sound. So it's it is a gimmick you can use within in your playing whatever it suits. But same goes for like you play with on your right hand. We don't use regular plectrum, but this is like. What you mainly use is like a coconut cutting. So, of course, I'm in Amsterdam, so I'm using artificial stuff. So this is a cutting board, plastic, which I made. And I think it sounds a little bit, slight difference on the sound.
So you were born in Suriname. When did you immigrate to the Netherlands?
Yeah, so my parents are the first-born generation in Suriname, so I'm the second-born generation in Suriname. I was like a baby, like infant, like 12 months, 14 months old, when my parents decided to shift to the Netherlands.
Okay.
I don't know if you know about how the relationship matches like between the Netherlands and Suriname. It's a colonial thing. We moved to Amsterdam and pretty much have been here ever since. So I feel more Amsterdam like than I feel Surinamese or anything.
Yeah. Now, I was curious about that because the Suriname got its independence from the Netherlands shortly before you were born, right? In the late 70s.
Yeah. Which was the main reason that my parents started to move, because politically, like there were a lot of things happening going on there that... didn't have the security for parents with two kids growing up, just like I was just there. So my parents decided it was better to come here. The language was the same because as a Dutch colony in Suriname at that time, the main language was Dutch. So the adaptation into the Netherlands was in that sense easier. This is pretty much where I got all my my most of my musical influence from as well.
You still have family in Suriname?
Yes, we do still have family in Suriname. Not really connected as much though, but my parents do.
Yeah.
Obviously, because that's the generation that's still there. And I even got some relatives in India, which is my not necessarily blood connection, but direct connection with India. But most of my family moved to the Netherlands, like pretty much at the same time or after my parents came in as well. So,
yeah, I was interested to learn about it because it's about 30% Indo-Surinamese, and it's a very interesting mix of cultures there. And I hadn't even heard of this South American country living in Canada until my daughter moved to the Netherlands.
Oh, really?
And then she was experiencing the food. And in fact, when she visited, she brought back these beautiful chutneys and hot sauces from the Surinamese store in Rotterdam.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's a whole different thing. It's very much similar to a lot of other Caribbean countries. But then again, because it has so many influences of the Indonesian, like which we call Javanese, or the even the African heritage is there, and the local native people are there, and a lot of Indian people are there, which are the Hindustanis, the so-called Hindustanis, which mostly That like the biggest group of Indian Surinamese people over there like have their roots in either northern part of India, or yeah, mainly one region is like the most dense part of where they came from, where we came from. So that's but that's a mix of all the cultures. You smell it, you taste it, and you hear it in every way. So and that come even. The community developed in a whole different way as well here in the Netherlands again. So it was it's really interesting to dive into that if you want to if you want to know more about the whole migration immigration. Like for us, it's now been 150 years of Hindustani Indian migration from India, Suriname to the Netherlands. So that's a lot of generations.
Yeah, I was also interested to learn about Indian music, South Asian music in the Netherlands. And I was doing some research, like on your guru, and also the. So you studied in Rotterdam. So it used to be called Codarts, the Rotterdam Conservatory, or
It's still
now
there,
called,
yeah.
yeah. So now called Codarts, because I was looking in 1987. They established this Indian music department, but the world music now is focusing on Turkish and Latin American. Like there's been a switch. Do you think that re reflects interest or migration, or is the South Asian music being taught more in different schools?
Well, there are many layers to that, so I can only exp like yeah go into a couple of like a couple of those layers. Like indeed like the Indian classical music has had a quite a how you say that yeah, it had quite a lot of things were going on at a certain moment, especially from the 60s, 70s till late 90s. There was a big community within the Indian classical, like artists and followers even. We didn't have the Instagram or social media followers, but actual physical followers who were either studying or just admirers of the music. And a lot of platforms too, like a lot of places they and we could play and perform and share our experiences. And there were a couple of because it's a small country, like it's a really close community, and there if there aren't the right torch bearers per se, as to say who don't take the lead in continuing it, then it fades away. And that's kind of happened now in the last couple of recent years, and that you see and that has its effect on Codarts, where the whole faculty actually, yeah, it's even difficult to say, it actually died down. Like it's non-existent almost. Like a handful of students only left, or eager enough or interested enough or motivated enough to go into that music. So it's partially of the people who were there and maybe didn't, how do you say that, share their experience enough to the next generation to pick it up, or the people who were in charge couldn't get enough people interested or motivated enough in this line of music. Which is an unique thing as itself, because this always has been a niche, especially in this country. So, yeah, unfortunately, it's not almost non-existent, and now it's just a couple of islands of musicians who are trying to keep it alive. Fortunately, so they are there, and we are trying to keep, yeah, to either keep the name of our gurus or ancestors or lineage or the music itself alive as much as we can.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about some of your collaborations, and there's beautiful, I'm assuming it's improvisation with the dancer Shailesh Bahoran.
Yeah, the working with Shailesh is like I started working with him a couple of years ago. I had the opportunity through a mutual friend to work together. And that was a whole new dimension, a whole new universe that opened up to me. Like the experience of someone physically expressing on the spot and not only expressing, but actually like connecting with you, what you're trying to express on the spot, like to experience that. That really opened up my eyes, like into a whole new dimension of not just playing, but the how do you say that? The getting into the emotion of playing, like what comes out of that, like it's a whole different approach almost. While we still as musicians we can only do so much, but to combine it with what you see happening in front of you at the moment, and it, the energy that it gives you back, yes, it's a wonderful experience. So I've been fortunate enough to work with this. To me, like he's a boss. He's my younger brother, but he's like he just won the Swan. Like that's a big prize here in the Netherlands. I don't know, maybe even, or in the dance world, dance scene. So he's a theater maker, and he's someone who grew up and developed himself on the streets, like with his break dance, hip hop, popping, locking. And the funny thing is, he's a Hindustani Indian guy. So the only thing that people associate us with in dancing is some Bhangra and stuff, and that's about it. So for him to go in completely into something different that's out of his culture or out of our culture, a cultural upbringing, I should say, and going into that. So that's quite a unique thing. So I'm fortunate enough, I've been working with him, and he is with his company IRC. They're open, releasing or premiering a new piece called Creole, which also goes into the story of our heritage, like the Surinamese mixing, like all the ethnicities coming together in one country. Like what impact and effect does it has on culture and or on artistical expression even, or on artistical dialogues which you have with different ethnicities, different vibes, different approaches. So he's they're premiering that, and again, fortunate enough to I was able to or I collaborated on making the music for the for that theater piece as well. So very honored. That's my music is touring with that guy through the Netherlands the next couple of months.
Very cool. Will you be playing live?
No, this one is recorded. I have been doing that live a lot because that's the best way to for
Yeah.
me to experience the whole thing. But this is nice that your at least your music lives on in a way.
Yeah.
And yeah, this yeah we did a small tour a couple of years ago called Shakti, about a little bit on the topic of non-duality. Very interesting, and that was a live setting. So vocalist Rajmohan and myself were doing the live music. So he was singing Indian classically, bit fusion or blend, and I tried to do the same on my sarod.
Well, I'll be linking one of those videos to the
Sure.
show notes so people can check it out. And you have a collaboration with a handpan player, Denise Cavafoglu. And there's a beautiful track, While She Sleeps. I was wondering if we could include that or part of it.
Sure. Funny thing is, that's the tr although I work with Denise, that the track While She Sleeps, I completely made myself.
Oh, okay. You're playing handpan on that. Okay.
Everybody plays handpan nowadays, right? So it's
I bought
yeah,
one too.
here you go. So it's a very nice like I love the. Yeah, I think violin as well, right? The combination of violin together with the handpan is really nice.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what we've been doing as well. The guy in particular, Denise, he's awesome. Like he's a percussionist, right? And from being a percussionist to play that instrument, so yeah, he makes it. Yeah, again, the live element to be able to share that on stage with people, that's amazing to me. That makes my heart tick.
You're about to hear an excerpt from Avi's composition, While She Sleeps. you use hip hop beats in a lot of your music. Do you think it brings new listeners into classical Indian music?
Yeah, well, no, not per se. I think it's just a way of expression for me. Like, it's me trying to share people how I would sound like if. I don't like because this is me. Like I am a bit of hip hop. I'm a bit of street music or popular music, but I'm a lot of indie music too. So that's what I'm trying to share. Not as a, I don't like the term fusion, but more as a blend of different genres and trying to make it like genreless. I'm saying all weird words right now, but I think you know what I mean.
So. Yeah, yeah. You do some cool things with your soundscape sessions. I was listening to Acceptance. Would that be something we could share a part of that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'd love doing that one. The idea was to eventually do some more meditative like more towards a meditation app kind of thing. We wanted to set up with a spoken word artist in that was the initial thing. Hindsight, before we started to do the thing with the spoken word artist, because it was so filled with so many elements and so many sounds, and it brings you to so many different states within each tracks, we thought it maybe this is okay just like this, fully instrumental. Mm-hmm. And to me it was really special to do, because like all the sound samples, all the outside noise and rain and sirens and voices are actually recorded here in my hood where I live. Like outside, I went on walks. I actually went to kindergartens and that sounds really creepy. Standing with my microphone next to the elementary school with permission of the teachers. I tried to. That was my first attempt to do combine live audio recording. Like a soundscape or a sound recording or with my music and so I always try to work in threes. I don't know, that's how I'm programmed, so that's why I have like the process of anticipation, like anticipating on what happens around you or what is gonna happen in life, or anticipation of love. Because that's what the raga I use in that piece in particular. It's called Bhagyashri, which actually is a raga that's been developed to depict the emotion of one lover, the moment as a lover that you're awaiting the arrival of your lover, something like that. So that's the anticipation part as well. Second part I have in the soundscape sessions is realization that what you were anticipating on, that it actually happened, being aware of it. And the final stage is acceptance, like it is what it is, whether what you've been waiting on still hasn't arrived or is there and you're fully into it and enjoying it in every kind of way. That's the part of acceptance. So I'm trying to, mm-hmm. As you may hear it, then it's more like a laid back vibe, more kind of going towards the trendy, chill lo-fi type of music. So that's what I'm trying. Yeah, that's what I've been trying to do. And everything with sounds and samples of made here, literally in and around my house.
Next is an excerpt from Acceptance from Avi's Soundscape Sessions. Now, I found your yoga flow album on Bandcamp. I'm a big fan of Bandcamp. You should put your other stuff
on there. A lot of
people
told me to do that. I'm just so reluctant in doing it. Like, my girlfriend actually had to push me to redo my website last year because it was looking like something out of 1990. So I'm getting into I'm really happy that I've just found out how to get the Spotify and Tidal and all that things working. So that we've tried to do that in recent years, and now we're slowly backtracking all the music on there as well. So, but I'm gonna take you.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I'm gonna go into that for sure. You will all see me more on Bandcamp.
Yeah. Well, it's a way to support the artist directly, and I'm just a big fan of that.
Hi, just a short break from the episode, which I hope you're enjoying so far. If you want to check out over 100 episodes you may have missed, in addition to your podcast player or YouTube, I have an extensive website, leahroseman.com, with show notes, transcripts, the complete catalog of episodes, and you can sign up there for my weekly newsletter to get access to sneak peeks of upcoming guests. Please do share your favorite episodes with your friends, follow me on social media, and share my posts. And if you can spare a few dollars to help support the series, that would be amazing, and you can find that link in the show notes. I'm an independent podcaster, and I really do need the help of my listeners. Now back to the episode.
So I wanted to talk about your father and the kind of creative childhood you had.
Yeah, my dad is my, like for many people, the first hero in your life. He's my the first hero in my life, and my first kind of guru, in the sense of musical gurus, not per se the spiritual guru. He's a musician, multidisciplinary artist. Like from the day I was born and aware, at least to experience what was happening around me, I've been seeing him working on composing, arranging music, towards painting, creating his own decor art pieces, which he can use in his own directed theater plays. So yeah, to me, it was normal to be around amazingly creative person, entity, in the form of my father. So I've been blessed. So everything, and I keep saying that, and not to sound too Indian or too puristic, or like I owe everything to my dad, but I do owe everything, like I do musically, to my dad, 100% sure. Mm-hmm. It was one of the first to start playing tabla in Suriname, like classical tabla, because in Suriname, the cult music and the cultural didn't, yeah, it wasn't classical. It was folkloristic music, happened a lot in Suriname, but Indian classical music wasn't alive in Suriname at all. So he was one of the first people at that time who started learning tabla. And from that, he started learning himself like a harmonium. And later when he came to the Netherlands, he started at actually in his mid-30s or early 30s, he started learning saxophone. So I woke up and fell asleep with him going in and out of tune on saxophone every every day. And going backstage on their performances and yeah, all that. So all credit to my dad.
So he was involved with theater. What kind of theater?
Yeah. He rolled into that one because he isn't a trained actor or anything. From his drive to promote his own culture in a foreign country as Netherlands was to him, he started writing his own plays based on stories that he experienced or his family experienced, or he knows from his great aunts or uncles or dads or, you know. And so he made in the start of his career as a theater maker, he made a lot of folkloristic, like sketches, folkloristic theater pieces, and like plays. And later he developed into a more like Indian classical stories, like not so commonly told stories, like we all know the Ramayana, or we know the Bhagavad Gita and the Mahabharata, but there are so many more stories and tales and of past times of Indian culture. So he started to develop that, and he now is like he's 75 and he's still working. Like he's still working on a new theater play based on just one part of the story between Ram and Sita, and he's actually working on it right now. So he's not stopping. I've been fortunate enough to work with my dad on his theaters as well as a musician. Like he gave me the first opportunity to actually start thinking as a producer, not just making the music, but like it has to add the sound to the moment or the story that's been performed on stage. I've been fortunate enough to do that at a young age as well. When we first had the first personal computers in our homes, the Atari ST or that. So from that time on, I followed him in his footsteps in that way.
So what's it like in terms of the racism in the Netherlands and being part of that Indo-Surinamese community?
Racism is here. There are different forms and layers of racism, but then again, it goes both ways. Because there are big communities that keep clinging to each other and just want to live within each other's bubble, in a foreign country. Yeah. Well, then you're gonna instigate some forms of racism always, in my opinion. So in that sense, but then again, this country, it has very many forms of institutionalized racism, and you can blame it because this is the one of the only country which kept on going with slavery when all the other countries said no. And Holland and the Netherlands at that time was one of the last countries that even increased their profits in the last couple of years of slavery, before they came to a bargain with the British and found my ancestors to do some labor for them in Suriname and other places. And those traces are still to be found here. I'm fortunate enough now to work in an organization called the Music Center Southeast of Amsterdam, and through that I'm getting to be quite active on a social in this within the social domain, as it's called. So I'm actually trying to connect the people of all those different ethnicities within the world of art or music, because it's needed. And fortunately, there are a lot of people who are speaking up, who are actually working with education within fields of education. Within the fields of political system. So there even in within the media we have our first couple of non-Dutch channels moved like TV channels. So we have our new Channel X and our Black channel and our cultural programs, and there are people who are actually researching to for lost names of European composers who weren't necessarily white. And so there are a lot of good things that are happening around here as well. So yeah, racism is alive and that's everywhere. And well, in my maybe little bit dark view, it will never go away. But fortunately, we have a lot of people who are speaking up more, reaching more people, speaking up louder, so it resonates with more people or with a wider audience. There are more people like you who give people like me the space to share their ideas and thoughts. And as you said, you reach a younger audience as you first expected. So those things are needed to keep the whole non-racism ideology alive. But yeah, and being an Surinamese Indian guy in the Netherlands, it's not yeah, I'm not gonna say my life was so heavy and no. Yeah, it was, but yeah, I don't know, I don't have a lot of authentic Dutch friends in that sense. I have a lot of people who I know and I get along with, even I collaborate with a lot of white or authentic Dutch people, but I'm not seen as Dutch. And when I go to Suriname, I know a lot of Surinamese people, but I'm not seen as Surinamese. And going to India, I know a lot of Indian people, but I'm not seen as Indian. So wherever I go, I'm not seen as theirs, so I'm just being mine as much as possible.
Yeah, I was curious about that intersection of cultures.
Yeah.
So you have traveled to India.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, I had to, and was blessed enough to be able to visit India multiple times now. I haven't been to India for a while now as well. that has to do with two things. One, my personal life didn't give me the opportunity to go at a certain time, and when it did, then the political climate in India started changing a lot, and not necessarily in a way that attracts me to be to feel welcomed in that country as much as I used to. So, but that's a topic I don't know too much about to go into that, but it doesn't feel okay to me. Like in these times, and a lot of people may disagree or not, like we don't need more nationalism. We need more like erasing all the lines and borders and all those things, and we need to find our like we need to allow ourselves to be different and be different together. Like it's so easy. Like it's like, but that's maybe another podcast, or I don't know. But yeah, no, it's the movement within India is for me too nationalistic, and you see that pretty much in more countries around the world that there's a shift going on in the political climate, economical climate, social climate. It's not nice.
Well, in your country of the Netherlands as well now.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Even here, like, it's not nice. But I've been thinking to move out of the city life for a long time. Find my own place either in somewhere south of France, Spain, Portugal, and happily go off grid and share my knowledge from there and have good memories over the create great memories, do my own gardening, which I'm already starting here and anyway, and I can make music from there and share it over the world, and I don't even have to move the woods where I would be at in a couple of years if it's up to me.
Well, I guess as an EU citizen, you can move. So if we could go back to when you were 11 and you discovered the Sarod and you grew.
Yeah, the nice thing to say that I was like Columbus who discovered America, but no, the Sarod was already there, and it found me, and that's really how I see it. Without trying to sound too yogiistic, but I really feel like that, like the Sarod, like it allowed me to play it. That sounds really crazy, but it is like. Yeah, maybe you felt the same when how did you start violin? You could have chosen all the other instruments that were in the orchestra for example, but you didn't choose it per se, I believe. Like it came to you. I think that's the experience that many musicians have. Like I'm not that unique in that in that way. So in that sense, yeah, Sarod found me, and I was struck by the first string that I first stroke of the strings that my Guruji at that moment played, and something told me I had to say to my mom that really I want to learn this. I need to learn this. I was playing cello at that time. I did a little bit of piano and a little bit of sitar. But no, this is the first instrument that I really had, like, okay, I really need to play this.
Just a quick break from this episode to point out that we're in season 4, and you may have missed more than 100 episodes with a fascinating diversity of musicians. If you like South Asian music, you will like my episodes with the bansuri player Milin Date and with sitar and tabla player Mohammed Asani. Please check out the complete catalog of episodes, which are linked in the description. Now, back to the episode.
How do you pronounce his name?
If you really want to go Kolkata Indian, then it's Kaustuvre. But Kaustuvre, or but here they call like he has a nickname which he's more commonly known by in the musical world, like Gungun, Gungunda, or Gungundada. But Kaustuvre is his actual name. Yeah.
What kind of memories do you have of those early lessons or
Pain and torture. No, yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. Like I realized, of course, later in my life, how special his teachings actually were, because, like, he actually comes from a lineage which was very strict and very puristic and very, this is the way you play, and he already as a person wasn't like that. He as a person, the fact that he was in the Netherlands as an Indian artist. It's not that crazy, but crazy enough. So that made him different in his approach to his teaching. He was very structured. He was very organized. I still have so many like written lessons of him because it's all doing been done like verbally, right? So he actually was writing all the different compositions or practices or exercises. So he was very structured in that sense. Very patient and very blunt, very outspoken, and but that's to me that's a perfect combination of a good teacher, someone who you can respect enough to take all the bullshit from, take all the like all the hammering and all the torture and sit straight, sit like this, don't blame like all those things. Like you need that, but you need a friend and a companion as well. And he became more of a friend and a companion during the time, of course. I was young as a kid, and as I grow older, I started talking to him more because the first 5 years, I didn't say anything more than Namaskar Guruji and thank you and bye. And that's it. Or how do you play this? But later on, yeah, he started being actually a good friend and not just a guide in life, but not just a guide in music, but a guide in life, more so. Yeah, I keep saying that to many people because he passed away a couple of years ago, 5 years ago. I've never had the intensity and the dynamics of the conversation I had with him. I never had with anyone else in my life up till now. So what is quite uncommon for a Sarod student, as I still am, to not go and search for another Guruji, I have absolutely no need or urge to do that. Like, having had my Guru in my life for such a big span of my life taught me so many things on so many levels. I really need to learn a lot of things, as we all can as a musician. We can always learn a lot of things, but I don't really feel per se that I need to have that from another guru type of person. I love to learn a lot, but I think the best way to learn is to do, and to do with a lot of good people as well. So every artist that I know that's at a top A class level or a better level or a higher experience level than I am, I love to work with you. Like, let me work with you because that's how I learn. You are my guru at that time. Like Shailesh, for example, the dancer we've been talking about, at that time, those moments that we interacted, we had our jam sessions, at that time, he was my guru. Like I might have been the same to him. I will never see myself like that, but like because that's where you learn, that's where you feel, that's where you explore, that's where you feel, that's where you enjoy, that's where you feel the pain of not doing it right or not coming to that emotion or not that like yeah. So the person as my guru was is too special of me to replace him in another person. Like I that feels weird to me. Like suddenly I have another dad. No. Like, no, if my dad is gone, he's gone.
And he's taught vocal singing as well. Did you do that with him at all?
Yeah, for one lesson, and then he said, you should never sing again.
Really?
Yeah, because at that time I was going through my puber,
Okay.
like my voice was changing. And that always stick to me, and I never dare to open my mouth again,
That's too bad.
apart from in the shower. Recently, though, that last year, for the first time that I dared to record my voice again, and that was for yeah, maybe something nice to talk about in my our new art collection, Raga
Right.
Reflections.
Yeah, let's talk about that because you're an entrepreneur and you've had different projects.
Yeah, I don't like the sound of the word entrepreneur, but it is what it is. But yeah, I'm trying to not be the trend follower in that sense, but I like to see what applying different developments within those trends, how you can apply that to your form of art or music in this way. So digital art, AI, all those things, we're just trying to find out as musicians if when you combine it with your music on like using digital apps and stuff, I'm just trying to figure out how that works, as goes for like putting words into art and putting art into music, see how that works. So what I tried to do, or what I actually did, not tried to do, what I actually did a little bit over a year ago, I just started talking to our new friend, ChatGPT, and I asked him, okay, if this is the theoretical background of this raga in particular, what would be the explanation in this type of emotion? Da, 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 da. And then on based on that, I started to craft some some poetry poems out of it. I composed a little bit of in yeah pure sarod music, so just the sound of the sarod, either it's sampled, looped, or whatever, but it's just the sound of the sarod, nothing else. And so combine the poetry with the soundtrack or the soundscape of the sarod combined with a digital art piece is like what we call now raga reflection. So I just made a selection of a couple of ragas because there's so many, and they're all like all registered and all like maybe if you read about or want to read about the Indian classical ragas, like Northern Indian and South Indian, there's a whole encyclopedia about it. But there have been made paintings on the ragas, which called ragmala paintings. So my idea was, okay, let's upgrade those ragmala paintings, or at least try to make a 2023-4 version of it and see how it works. Because nowadays everybody wants to do a remake of everything. All the movies, all the stories, all the books, all the music even has been like have been getting their remakes. So I tried to remake some of the Ragmala paintings in and called it Raga Reflection. And I chose the word reflection because it's not actual the raga, but it's a reflection of the raga. So not to kick anyone's shins like on the puristic level, because people are very particular about their raga history and all that.
Yeah, so I listened to some of that. I was curious, like the artwork then, is that AI generated for the merch and all that?
Yes, AI generated based on some info and prompts I gave the raga. So what I first the process was, I actually did a whole research. Of course, I used ChatGPT, but you have to do the input, otherwise ChatGPT just blows out something. So I actually quite some time spending in to get the right information out of ChatGPT, and then made the curated selection of what to use in that whole picture. So now the idea is, we started with the first three art pieces, and we're only gonna do up till now. That's the plan for now. Gonna do a whole a selection of nine art pieces, not the 174 or 47 that are there, but just nine, and make a story, make some music, and just see if we can get. Yeah, this is maybe the first thing that I'm really trying to reach. An audience that we as Indian classical musicians haven't reached before. So this is maybe my first ever attempt to see, okay, what's out there and how can we reach those people? So based on that collection, we actually made NFTs, like going into the trend. And based on the NFTs, like people can actually buy those three current art pieces that are out there. for one Ethereum a piece, and we made a whole web shop now. So we're trying to sell, and actually people are buying it, and I'm wearing it, and I'm not going into stores anymore. I'm just printing my own clothes now and being my own banner, so to speak.
Yeah, I took a look at the merch and I listened to some of the music.
Yeah, now that I have three Raga Reflections out, like one is based on Bhairavi, one is based on one of my favorite rags, Malkons, like Night Mood, and one is Darbari, like the rag of the royalties. So yeah, that's where I took like that's my starting point, and from that we did what we did.
You're about to hear Darbari from Avi's Raga Reflection series. Please check out the link to his website in the description of this podcast.
So you do have this background in sales and marketing.
Yeah, it was kind of because, like, in my early 20s, I came to a certain point, like, because I came to code arts at a young age. Like at a young age, I was really, a lot of people put a lot of air up, like a lot of feathers up my, you know. So I knew I could do anything I want within the world of art and music. I would be okay anyway. But I didn't know anything about the world around me as much. I was living in that bubble of my being with on my father's theater pieces, going on their shows, doing all the study of, with my guru and code arts. So that was my bubble. So I kind of wanted to prove myself and the world around me, like I can sustain and I can excel even in the materialistic world as we live in. And so I did. I started in finance, even started up some companies and I failed. And then I slowly got into sales, like very simple selling whatever you can imagine, legit. Into actually building up sales teams and sales companies and doing big like product like actually marketing campaigns for a lot of big brands. And at a certain point, I was married at that time and my relationship broke and collapsed because that happens if you focus just on the materialistic side and don't put any attention into your relationship. So it broke and my motivation broke and my like there was no passion anymore to do so. So I stopped that whole entrepreneurial, like that whole organization, which I actually, proven myself quite a lot that what I can do within this, in this system. And now I'm just picking up bits and pieces and trying to put it in, sharing the skills with the community, kids, talents, artistic endeavors, projects. We put up a foundation to support different in different ways, like from project support, media support, and and that's to me. It hasn't, it didn't have any, in any kind of way, came close in the financial rewards of what I gained in my sales and marketing time because that was crazy. But the reward I feel after every day, at the end of every day, with the experiences of what I shared with the people now, like all the kids that you see the smiles on when you share your art classes, all the teachers who are happy, who can be focused better on teaching their classes, all the projects that I can help people in do what they want and can do best. That's so rewarding in so many ways, much more than that. For me, another way of realizing and accepting the definition of success. Can be quite different than what we're all conditioned to see what success is. So that's pretty much what I'm experiencing the, in my recent years now.
Were you still playing music during that time when you're so busy in the corporate world?
No, and that's where I felt so lost. Like that was the most financial successful time I ever had in my life, but I wasn't as close as like that wasn't me. Like I was as far from myself as I could be at that time. So yeah, because it had to, I had to develop or actually get trained to have a certain mentality or focus or mindset that wouldn't allow me to fully tap into my creativity or tap into my musicality more so. So yeah, no, there was a 10 years of being fully focused on going into all the profits.
So, Avi, this organization you refer to where you're working with children, what is that?
No, a couple of years ago, we founded started up a foundation with a collective of within the community, some volunteers, people who still volunteer for the foundation, with the idea of supporting artist talents like myself. Because like there are a lot of very talented people around there, not that I'm so talented, but people with a lot of skills, talents, and everything, but they don't have the surrounding or the backing or the big company or the patrons around them to support them. And yeah, I've had the opportunity to learn a lot from big management moguls and all those thing people. So why not share it with people who don't have that? So that's what we try to do and still do. And now we're connected through that. Me personally as well, connected to an organization called the Music School of Amsterdam, like a music center of Amsterdam. And there, what they do is actually people, like kids from elementary school. So from, I don't know, in the grades how you have that in the US, but from on elementary school, they give them like a couple of week, times a week, once a week, how do you say that? Orchestra classes. So they teach them either violin, cello, a trombone, or like all the different instruments. And then once a week, they come together as an orchestra within the class. So as part of that organization, I'm just supporting the teachers. So enabling them to focus more on the teaching and not be too much involved with all the fuss around it. So to support them in that, in other way, in other sense, I'm trying to connect the kids more with the community. So yeah, so it gets a more a community thing than just on the schools. So to attract partners on in within the community, like local initiatives. Like there are a lot of different initiatives and community initiatives going around here, like NGO type of organizations. But yeah, that's a thing in the Netherlands. A lot of islands, but they don't come together. So my job recently has started. I started is to bring all those people together with music. So that's pretty much where I spend 20-30% of my weekly time with quite a lot actually. This is getting more and more, but it's something I can support. Like it's something I always wanted to do anyway, to share the experience, share the knowledge, and enable people to actually make music. And that music has to be like a basic thing, basic right, basic element on any school. So fortunately, with this organization, I am able to do that, and yeah, I can't wait to do more. Like it's been the last couple of months has been quite intense, but yeah, bring it on! Like anything for the kids in the community, especially the kids where if you have a little bit of understanding of the community where I live in, like the neighborhood where I live in, or the part of Amsterdam, is it's the most mixed area. I'm allowed, maybe I'm convinced to say enough of Europe. Like 189 different ethnicities walking around this area of Amsterdam. So that's crazy. So a lot of flavors, a lot of different smells and scents, and a lot of different ideas on life and approaches to life. But a lot of things happening together as well. So, and obviously, most parts in Europe, as you may know, where the ethnicities are more mixed than it is authentic or you said the original Dutch, or I don't know even what original Dutch is, it's more of a lower income, generally speaking. So, in that sense, yeah. Our parents had to pay quite some money for us to study the music. And most of the parents in the communities and neighborhoods where I live in or where I'm surrounded in don't have that. So we need help from organizations that I'm allowed and that I'm able to work with now. So I'm very fortunate that I'm able to do that now.
Wonderful. Well, thanks. Just to close this out, if you could reflect, you know, I listened to quite a bit of your music before we talked today. I find it's very spacious music. And I'm wondering, I think you have kind of a spacious mind. Did that come with the training or with changes in your life?
My guru used to say to me always, like, Avi, or Avinash, that's how he used to call me, you're way too intuitive. So that's all I can say about that. I really had to learn, and I'm still learning, to be grounded enough, like, in the sense of, like, I'm very much an earthy person in that sense, but I'm very much into the ether as well. And I don't know, it's maybe that's the stars I'm born under, or I don't know.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for this today.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please do share this with your friends and check out episodes you may have missed at leahroseman.com. If you could buy me a coffee to support the series, that would be wonderful. The link is in the description. Have a wonderful week.